any that organized that we got certification would come under the master agreement for the province. And it was a big decision. We knew we couldn't get that same kind of a contract with the BC Hotelmen's Association, but we felt that it was would be better if we did. You know, to negotiate, you know, every hotel, you know, even in the city of Vancouver was a tremendous thing, you know, the hours, and we really wanted a uniform agreement. So we had to make concessions, and we did. We didn't get the same contract that we would have liked to have had, but it was the first contract, and we said, look, if we can get union security, we won't get a lot of money, get a few conditions on hours, broken shifts and that kind of thing, working conditions, then we can't expect to get the wage increases that we would have liked to have had. I think it was a correct decision. It's still in existence.
Because it established.
Yes, it established the trade union movement throughout the British Columbia among hotel workers. So I negotiated the first contract. I was on the negotiating, and we had the building service employees also helped in organizing hotels because there was some people in the hotels felt under their jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So they also were in on the negotiations. But, yes, you know, I was once thrown out of the Belmont Hotel as a prostitute. I could tell so many funny stories.
What happened after?
Well, we had a method of organizing that seemed to work very well. And by the time we got down to the Belmont, I was applying the same method. We didn't always know how tall a building is. You could count it on the outside, but often we were dashing in and out of hotels and we couldn't remember how many floors there were. So you used to go in and head for the elevator, and you got in the elevator and you would say, top floor, please. The elevator guy, then they didn't have automatic elevators.
Right.
You had an elevator man. So, you know, you just say top floor. You never knew how many floors, but he took you up the top floor. So you'd get out of the elevator, and you would look for mops and pails in the hallway and doors open where you'd see a chambermaid, you know, working, or anybody that you thought worked, but mainly chambermaids. And then you would talk and try to convince her that she should come into the union. And then you took the stairs and you went down another floor, you see, on the stairs. And you kept coming down and down, hoping, you know, you usually got caught. But this time I had only... in the Belmont Hotel, I think I had come down two or three floors, and the next thing I hear, of course, every time you heard the elevator, you tried to dash into a room, like out of sight, that you weren't in the hallway. Anyway, I got caught flat out. He came up, and this great, big, huge, burly dick, house detective, gets off. I'm sure he weighed out. To me, he looked like 300 pounds, came stomping down the hall. Said, what are you doing in this building? And I just said, it's none of your business what I'm doing. And he said, well, I'm taking you out. He said, you come down with me to the elevator. But he kept persisting and asking me what I was doing. And I just said, I am not breaking any laws. And I don't think it's any of your business what I'm doing. Anyway, he got me down in that elevator and opened the elevator door. And here was this great big lobby with all the Chesterfields, big chairs. And there was people sitting all around. And I'll swear that from the elevator to the door looked like a mile. I'm sure it wasn't any more than about 30 or 40 feet, but to me it looked like a mile. And in a loud, loud voice, he said, we don't allow you kind of women going up in our hotel, look, knocking on men's doors and peeking, looking for business. And everybody in the lobby turned their head and gave me such a look. Anyway, he really was telling me I was a prostitute soliciting business in the hotel, and I just felt that if he knew who I was, that I may not get back in. I couldn't tell him what I was doing. Anyway, I threw my head up in the air and marched right out the door. But I must honestly tell you that I've never forgotten this. I got out in the street, and the minute I got out on the street, I started to cry that he should take me. It was my first experience of being taken for a prostitute. And I just leaned against the side of the building and cried, and all the time under my breath said, I will get you, mister. I will get you when we negotiate. I am coming back to see you. And I did. We negotiated that hotel agreement, and one of the men that was on the hotel's negotiating committee was the manager of that hotel. And during negotiations, of course, I told him about it, and I said, someday I'm coming in to see that guy. He said, yes, I'll introduce you to him. Sweet revenge. Sweet revenge.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. That's great. We had many interesting experiences organizing, you know.
So what year did you get this master agreement? Was that 45 or so?
45? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. 45 or 46.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Was the war over? I have a hunch it was. I think it was around, well, it'd be late 45 or 46, because I met my husband, who was also in the trade union movement, at a conference, and I met him in 1946, in August. And I'm not sure whether I think we were in negotiations when I met him, but in around that time.
Right, okay. Do you remember the numbers of people who were organized in the bargaining, I guess in the local at that time?
Well, now it's very hard. Let me think. When I went into the local, I think there was only, it had been kind of dormant. It had a nucleus of people in the restaurants who really stuck with the union, but I don't think that union was more than about 200 at the time. But we went up to, I think we went up to over 900. You
through
know,
that
through the main, a good chunk we brought, I think we went to about 400 or 500 when we did the drive on the restaurants, which
right.
But then when we brought in the hotels, I think we must, as I recall, we could have even had more than 1,000. But I know we went more than doubled our membership.
Right. Did you find the process of servicing the restaurants a difficult process?
Yes, they were. We had shop stewards, of course, but May, who was the business agent, May Martin now, she was called May Anselin, and of course I was Emily Watts then, that was before I was married. But May was one of those people who could never, never get up in the morning. She used to put an alarm clock in a big basin and still she slept through it. So we worked it out very well. She took the night shift. So we blocked off places that had to be serviced. So she did the night shift, and she'd be in and out of those restaurants 2 and 3 in the morning, you know, the all-night ones. And I took the day shift, come in, and I did the servicing mainly in the daytime, and she did the night shift. It really worked out quite well, thank goodness, because I was an early riser. And
what kind of servicing would you do? What kind of things would people...
Well, I think you'd get a phone call, you know, from a shop steward, and there was a complaint, and she couldn't handle it, or he couldn't handle it, and a problem. And so you said, I'd be down today or tomorrow or whenever, you know, the first opportunity you got, you would go down and see what the complaint was and try to work it out.
What kind of hassles were there from management? Were there violations of contract there?
Yeah, violations of contract, and even sometimes just personality problems, you know.
Right.
It was many things, you know, dispute over something, and something to do maybe with uniforms or with hours, and, you know, so mm-hmm. We had the union contract was printed up, and boy, when I see the union contracts today compared to what we used to have, they almost look like a Bible today. But we had the union contract printed up on a little cardboard that folded, and every union member got a copy of the contract,
right.
You know. We had the two contracts. We had a contract for restaurants, and we had a contract for hotels.
Right.
So they had, you know, and the shop steward always had a contract in her, you know, on her, in her purse. And so, yeah, sure, there was all different kinds of complaints. So you go down, try to iron it out. It worked very, very well, as a matter of fact, as I recall.
Right. What kind of involvement was there from union members in union activity at this time? You organize people, did they come in and get active on executives?
Yes. We had an executive board, and the executive board met, and we had regularly. It's hard to remember how often, but our union meetings were once a month. And we had really, considering what union members are like, we had a pretty good turnout. I think there was a lot of enthusiasm because a lot of people were being organized for the first time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you never, you know, you know where our office used to be? In the old Williams building, right at the corner of Hastings and Granville. And I see that building's all torn down now.
Yeah, right.
As I recall, we were on the top floor. Gee, it was an old building then. It had one of those grating elevators, you know, which has grates instead of, like, solid walls. And a little old man used to run that elevator. He was a dear. I'm sure he was about 80. We were on the third floor, and our union office faced right over the corner. We were in the corner. And we had an office, and we had a hall. And the hall would hold, as I recall, about 150 people, easy. We used to get pretty good turnouts. The hall was usually pretty full on union meetings. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really good. Was that in part a spirit of the time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you must remember that most people that work in our trade, not all, but most people are young people. You know, the predominant age is certainly not like some of the building trades, for instance, or anything. They predominantly were young people, and it was young people that were officers of the union and running, and I guess we were full of spit and vinegar. I don't know. We were all very enthusiastic. We were young and had a lot of energy. We didn't think it terrible if you sat up at an executive meeting till 2 o'clock in the morning and back in the office in the morning and on the go day and night. No. I think it had to do with the times. I think it had to do with a lot of young people.
Right.
With a lot of energy.
Would you say that, the organization that took place in this period of time, did this come primarily from a small group of people who got really enthused with the idea? Did it come from the people who worked in the industry itself? Was it a combination of those things?
It was everything. It was that. It was poor working conditions, terrible wages, abusive bosses. You know, some of those restaurant owners were really pretty terrible. Yes, they were. They had a free rein. I can remember when I started out to work in Winnipeg that I had more than one boss that pinched me and tried to date me and, you know, and you didn't dare. This was the Depression years, and you didn't dare open your mouth. Mm-hmm. Harassment was common, very common in restaurants, not only by the owners, but clientele, you know, and nothing was, you didn't dare open your mouth. You were there to serve. You could be abused by a customer. You could be abused by a boss. No, so that came from that. Mm-hmm. But there was a general air at that period that I'm talking about during the war years where there was a lot of other people. There was union people who would come into a restaurant and say, is this a union restaurant? Where's your union card that's up and over the bar? And so we had support from the trade union movement, from a lot of the various unions. I think there was a lot of them too that knew a brother or a father or someone in their family, you know. No, the general atmosphere was pro-union, not anti-union, not at that time.
What was the work itself, was it done by men and women, or was there a clear sort of division between the kinds of jobs that men had and women had?
Well, yeah, it's changed quite a bit now, but, you know, I think, generally speaking, the front staff, the waitresses were women, and the back were men, the cooks were men. That was generally the division, but there was a few places then that had waiters,
mm-hmm.
like the big hotels in their top rooms, you know, dining rooms, they were waiters. But generally speaking, yes, women worked helping the cooks
Yeah.
But dishwashers were men. But then there was all places that had nothing but men. I remember the Oyster Bar, as I recall, had nothing but men waiters and men in the back, and it was kind of mixed.
Did you find an equal kind of interest and involvement from the men and the women in the process of organizing?
Well, to be quite honest, I think there was more enthusiasm by the women. I think they were the best union members were the women. I don't know, the cook always felt he was just a little bit, you know, he had a prestigious position in comparison to waitresses. It wasn't so easy to change a cook as it was to throw a waitress out of a job and get another one. No, the women were, I once made the statement, give me a picket line of good, dedicated women, and they will out-picket any man. And I really believe that.
Let me just turn this over.